Good morning. You've tuned into North Idaho News of the Week here on 88.5 KRFY, that is, and it's Panhandle Community Radio. I'm Jack Peterson, and I'm with Chris Bessler, as usual on these Friday mornings. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. How are you today?
Great. It's a beautiful spring day.
It's, kinda. It's going to get nicer, I think.
That's actually what I hear. Yeah. At least I didn't get wet on my way down, so, you know.
That makes it beautiful right there.
That's enough. And we're joined this morning by Ben Olson, the publisher of the Sandpoint Reader. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning.
Hey, great to have you here. It's Friday, April 3rd, and let's jump into the news. The state legislature, let me start at the national level. The No Kings Day rally was held this past weekend on Saturday and was the largest day of protest or the most well-attended day of protest in the country's history. Reportedly, 8 million people gathering at more than 3,300 separate rallies in all 50 states and Washington, D.C. Here in Sandpoint, the rally at the courthouse from 2 to 4 p.m. drew about 1,100 people, which I believe is the best attendance that we've had so far in these three or in these this series of No Kings rallies that have been held in Sandpoint. Ben Olson wrote the story on that. We'll talk more about that event in just a minute. Let me talk about state news, where the Idaho legislature has officially adjourned for the year. For 81 days under the Idaho State Capitol Rotunda in Boise, the Idaho legislature and Governor Little enacted a series of across-the-board budget cuts that reduced funding for most state agencies and departments by 4% this year and 5% beginning in fiscal year 2027, which starts on July 1st. I have a list here from our local news sources, as well as from the Idaho Capital Sun, just some highlights of what's transpired during this very busy season. Of course, lots more bills passed than we'll talk about here, but here's a couple of headlines. Looking back, the Idaho legislature did force the city of Boise to take down its LGBTQ plus pride flag by passing House Bill 561, which called for a $2,000 per day fine to be levied against government entities that fly unapproved flags. Governor Little signed the bill into law on Tuesday morning, but that bill did carry an amendment moved by Josh Kaiser and seconded by Jim Woodward, our senator from Legislative District 1. That will allow flags, it will allow the city of Bonner's Ferry, basically, to continue to fly the Canadian flag. The text of that basically allows the flying of a foreign country's flag if the to celebrate a historical international relationship or words to that effect. He spoke about this at a town hall meeting on March 28th at the Boundary County Fairgrounds and faced to great applause. And he also mentioned it at a town hall meeting here in Sandpoint that Ben Olson was at, along with myself and Chris Bessler, on March 28th. Governor Little also signed into law House Bill 752, making it a crime for people who, quote, knowingly and willfully, unquote, enter a bathroom, locker room, shower room, or changing room that is designed for the opposite biological sex. Opponents of the bill said it is designed to punish trans people who use the bathroom that aligns with their gender identity. The Idaho legislature passed House Bill 822, the Pediatric Secretive Transitions Parental Rights Act, which would require that teachers and doctors inform parents of transgender children if they are being identified or seeking care for their gender identity. House Bill 913 calls for the state to implement work requirements by the end of the year for adults enrolled in Medicaid expansion in order to receive benefits. That bill proposes implementing the work requirements that were part of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. And also the Idaho legislature passed House Bill 895 on a slightly different subject. It's designed to protect water resources for farmers and other uses as new data centers are built in Idaho. So protecting water resources for agriculture and citizens in the face of construction of these new data centers. Senator Woodward and State Superintendent of Public Instruction Debbie Critchfield gathered to discuss these issues and others with community members for local town halls up here in Legislative District 1 on March 28th. There was one in Bonner's Ferry, one in Priest River, and the one in Sandpoint ran from noon to 1:30 at Sandpoint Community Hall. Due to Debbie Critchfield's presence at the event, much of the discussion was focused on public education. And we'll talk more about that in just a minute after these further headlines. The Lake Ponderay, in Lake Ponderay news, the early spring runoff is unusually high. The lake level is projected to be above 2,055 feet this week. I didn't pull it up to see exactly where it is, according to that monitoring station out in Hope, but supposed to be in this first week of April above 2,055 feet, which is high for spring. The Corps of Engineers is holding their next public meeting on to discuss the lake level and other things on Thursday, May 7th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Sandpoint Center. That's the bank building where Marigold Bistro is located. And then the Lakes Commission will meet on Friday, May 8th from 10 to 1 p.m. at the Ponderay Events Center. This weekend is closing weekend for Schweitzer Mountain. They are closing a week early, and the final day will be Sunday, April 5th, due to historically low snowfall this year and this warm and wet spring weather that we've been having. In the city of Sandpoint, the parking plan to be implemented this summer is taking shape, at least in the public imagination. It's already through city government and is now being presented to the public and in all media, including here on KRFY. Mm-hmm. You can listen back to the Wednesday morning show with Jason Welker, who is the planning and community development director for the city of Sandpoint. And he was in conversation with you, Chris. A good talk where he really broke down, and I learned some things about how parking is going to be monitored and changed here in the city of Sandpoint. Worth listening to. Did you learn anything new during your conversation with Mr. Welker?
Well, I clarified some things, specifically how it's going to work if you're parking on First or Cedar, where on-street parking still free for 2 hours. But unlike now, where you park and you walk in and an enforcement officer comes by to check your tires. They can monitor if you or your vehicle is moved by the tire stem, whether it's moved or not. They can't take pictures of things. It's kind of a convoluted deal. But under the new system, you're actually going to have to go to a kiosk and put in your license plate or a code if you want to get that 2 hours of free parking. So that's going to be one change for people, is that as soon as you park, you want to jump out, there'll be a kiosk. There'll be a few kiosks on each block, so it won't be more than probably 30 or 40 feet away from wherever you park, and you'll need to enter your car. And that lets you go for 2 hours. And then even if you're remote, right now, if you park and you don't get back in 2 hours, you're subject to getting a fine. But even if you are remote, you'll say you're, you know, in the Panada or something, and your 2 hours is expiring and you're not going to get back in time, you would, with this app that's going to accompany this whole platform, be able to go ahead and buy another hour's worth of parking. So first 2 hours free. After that, you can buy some additional parking. And that's just on first in Cedar, where they're going to have that kind of regulated parking. And then all parking in the city lots is going to be paid. And of course, city residents can get an annual parking pass for $15. He did clear up one thing, and that is there was some stuff going around on Facebook. Never a good source for information, saying, yeah, it's $15, but the company that has all the equipment is going to charge you an additional $15 to process your order. And Jason clarified that that is the $15 you're paying the city. They're going to cover that. So there's not going to be $15 plus $15 of processing fee. It's just $15 if you're a city resident. If you're a county resident or anybody else, you can buy the parking pass for $30. Those last for the year. That lets you park in any of the paid parking lots without any additional fees. So there's a lot more to it, but yeah. If you want to go back to KRFY.org, you can listen to that whole interview, or you can go to the city website. They have a good explainer video there, and they also have a bunch of details, an FAQ, frequently asked questions, and you can find that on the City of Sandpoint website.
I've used parking kiosks in the past, and they're usually fine. I don't think I've ever gone to a parking kiosk and entered my license plate and then not had to pay. It's just sort of a check-in.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This would be the first
time.
So
if you park and you don't use the kiosk and the parking enforcement guy comes by, you're subject to getting a ticket.
Yeah.
And of course that's a big adjustment for everybody. And Jason said there will be a period of time for transition that people can get accustomed to the system before they actually start fining people for that.
In other city infrastructure news, the downtown revitalization phase 3 was presented at city council on April 1st, this past Wednesday. Further presentation on that. We're going to have to discuss that on a later show, but just watching that city council meeting, I think that the headline is the goal is to turn that whole stretch of First Avenue that is past, I guess, what is that?
From Church to Lake Street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of having it be a road to downtown, turn that kind of into part of downtown, or turn that into part of the destination.
Yeah, that's kind of aspirational. Yeah. Uh-huh. But you know, it'll follow the same scheme that they have on the other parts that they've already reconstructed. You know, further north on First Avenue. But one thing Jason said during our talk is that they really have a neat, he's described as a really cool reconstruction of that intersection right there where Bridge Street comes in, and there's a lot of confusion. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to turn left. A lot of people hang out and wait there to turn left, and that puts a big snarl in the traffic. So they're going to have some, they're going to build it in such a way you got to turn right, at least in the summer. But he said they have a really neat reconstruction for that that's going to make it feel more like a town square. So I haven't seen the plans for that. I'm interested in seeing that.
They also, in the city of Sandpoint, branch pickup begins on April 20th at 7 p.m. So if you have branches in your yard and you want to be picked up, there is that will occur on April 20th and only on April 20th. And you should have them waiting by the side of the street for the crews to pick them up by 7 a.m. because they will not be going down more than once down any particular block.
Important qualifier there, branches only, not lawn clippings.
Yeah.
They're not picking those up.
And hey, April 9th is Local News Day. How about that? That's a nationwide event, but it seems appropriate to mention it here on Panhandle Community Radio and in the presence of...
Where we think every day is Local News Day.
That's right. Yes, and every Thursday especially is Local News Day for the Sandpoint Reader. Are you guys celebrating? Do you have big plans for Local News Day, Ben? Office party?
I'm a little embarrassed to admit that I just heard about it before we started airing. So,
yeah.
As Chris said, every day is Local News Day when you live and breathe it. So...
Mm-hmm.
No special plans yet, but we might gin something up. I'm not sure.
I also just read about it this morning. I don't know.
There is a localnewsday.org website if people want to check that out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, let's talk about that after those lengthy headlines. Well, who knew that the Idaho legislature was going to adjourn on time, more or less? Let's talk about that visit from Senator Jim Woodward and Superintendent Debbie Critchfield. Among other things that were discussed, I mean, it was state issues, of course, largely, but public education was a big part of it, and local issues too. And there were some school board, at least one school board member, I guess, in attendance, and local teachers were there talking about, among other things, the proposed closing of Lake Pend'Oreille High School. That was a big topic of discussion, and I don't think Superintendent Critchfield was particularly aware of that topic of great local interest.
Yeah, it's more of a local thing.
Yeah. Ben, you were there. What are your main takeaways from that event? What, anything surprise you about it, or anything, you know, really catch your attention?
You know, I mean, it's nice to have the superintendent of public schools attend a meeting. I think it was nice for people to hear a little bit of her point of view on educational matters. I mean, they run those meetings pretty well. Representative Souter wasn't there because he had to attend a funeral, and Representative Cornell Razor wasn't there because he doesn't attend the Sandpoint ones. So, you know, Woodward and Critchfield, they run a pretty good meeting. They had a spirited crowd that asked good questions, I thought, and like the coverage talks about, they centered a lot on education, kind of talking about some of the budget issues, talking about, you know, Debbie Critchfield talked a lot about literacy efforts and how she's trying to, you know, buoy those up in the state of Idaho. I mean, she brought up things like, you know, teaching cursive again, and, you mm-hmm. know, things that we don't think about a whole lot, but they actually, you know, according to her, there's data that says people that learn to read and write cursive are actually able to make improvements. And so just kind of things like that I was surprised about. It was helpful hearing from Senator Woodward about some of the bills that he was disappointed that didn't pass, as well as ones that he touted as a success. You know, that Bonner's Ferry, or that the flag bill, he talks for a little while in the beginning of the meeting about how he kind of went to bat for Bonner's Ferry and brought it back to the amending order and finally got a win on that. Because, you know, Bonner's Ferry has flown the Canadian flag for decades. It's a cross-border cooperation thing. With that city, it's a unique county in Idaho. It's the only one that borders an international country. So, you know, we're huge trading partners with Canada, and so I think that was a win there. I think the bill itself was a kind of a vindictive bill that was centered around trying to punish the city of Boise, and it had a few far-reaching effects. I feel like they tried to clean up as much as they could. And so that was a win for him. And I think the questions that came from the audience to Debbie Critchfield were really, they kind of touched on the issues that are going on here in Idaho. They talked a little bit about the closure of the Lake Pend'Oreille High School, or, you know, the quote unquote alternative school. You know, it's not the school that's closing, it's the facility. And so they talked a little bit about that, a little bit about the budget stuff, about the, you know, the House Bill 93, the private and religious school voucher thing. It was just nice to hear kind of from the horse's mouth, as it were, how she's dealing with all these issues in Idaho. And one moment I thought was interesting was when somebody brought up the federal government dismantling the U.S. Department of Education. And she actually came out in support of that and said, I support that dismantling because it essentially streamlines the process. And you know, there's a mentality a lot in the legislature where, you know, keep the control as far down the chain as possible. You know, you don't want the city or you don't want the state to tell cities what to do. You don't want the federal government to tell states what to do. And it's an interesting parallel because, I mean, we saw so many bills come out of the legislature this year that are essentially state controlling local municipalities. And so it is a lofty goal, I think, to try to bring control to a local level. But it only seems to work in certain areas. So she was in favor of that, basically saying that, you know, it's a model for what needs to happen at the state level. So there's still that mentality out there about keeping control local. Just in practice, it doesn't seem to work out very well.
Yeah, except for flags, right?
Yeah, except for flags and bathrooms. And, I mean, I have a list.
And short-term rentals, that kind of thing. Yeah. I learned cursive. I don't know if are they still teaching cursive in school right now?
I don't know. I learned cursive, and then I started writing like my dad writes, which is in all capitals, and I've always written that way. And I still remember my third grade teacher, Mrs. Harris, saying, "You'll never get anywhere in life if you don't learn cursive." And I thought, what a dumb statement. But listening to Superintendent Critchfield talk about how it actually helps kids with dyslexia, and it, you know, learning cursive helps literacy rates. I mean, the data points to that. So it's an interesting parallel. I don't think it hurts anything. And she brought up another point where it's, you know, we want our kids to be able to learn how to read historical documents. And a lot of historic documents are in cursive writing.
And hard to read.
Yes.
If you ever try to read the original on like the Declaration of Independence, got to work out some words there.
Yeah. They didn't really know how to write their S's.
Yeah, completely. No, yeah, they looked like F's actually, yeah.
Well, there won't be another, at least nothing scheduled for another visit from our representatives.
I think they mentioned they might have like a wrap-up in a... month
they did,
or so?
You know, yeah. They did last year, and yeah. Last year the session went, I think, well into April, if I recall. And this year, this event was only a few days before they ended up closing for the year.
Yeah, and I know that Woodward and Souter usually do a story in the reader to kind of give a little, you know, here's what happened, here's what we tout as a success, and here's some things that we wish would have succeeded. And so you can look out for those either, I think this next week coming up, April 9th and perhaps the week after, but they usually contribute something.
Yeah.
Nice to hear their recap on the year.
Did Mr. Razor ever send you anything about that?
We invite him to.
Yeah.
But no, he doesn't.
Yeah. The No Kings protest, was immediately after that. In fact, some of the organizers, were assembling in the kitchen of the Sandpoint Community Hall as Woodward and Critchfield were wrapping up their event, because they had rented Community Hall starting immediately afterwards for some booths and informational tables. Am I correct that this was the biggest one so far? Looked, you know, like it to me.
Yeah, when I looked up the list of American protests, it's funny that the top three as far as attendance on single day protests are No Kings 3, followed by No Kings 2, followed by No Kings 1. And then I think Hands Across America is like the fourth one. And that was in the 80s, I think it was. So, I mean, it's growing. Every time we seem to get more people around the country. And, you know, I mean, it's a festive atmosphere. It's peaceful. It's, you know, people are, you can tell there's a, there are seeds being sown right now, and people are quite fed up. And you know, there's the usual middle finger every once in a while. There was a coal roller, but you know, it's a peaceful event, and it's people demonstrating politically. It's kind of what is baked into our Constitution, and so it always makes me feel good to see that the people still have at least the power of telling people, or telling the powers that be, what they feel. And whether you're protesting for No Kings, or you're protesting or striking or whatever else. I mean, it's a symbol that the American people know that their rights are intact and they can use them. They can use their voices in public. And so I think it was a good day for Sandpoint overall, just, you know, seeing demonstration.
Yeah, no major, I mean, yeah, like you said, couple middle fingers, but no major counter protest or anything like that. This one, or I haven't really heard of any stories of any kind of violent or, you know, clashing anything. It's been nationwide peaceful protest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, the numbers from organizers, at least the numbers are 8 million plus. You know, I saw one source that said around up to 9 million. And I mean, that's a lot of people in one day to protest. And mm-hmm. So it was a good day, and it was always good to see the people of Sandpoint come out. And, you know, it's fun to mix with the general public.
Mm-hmm. Turning to page 11 in my reader, I see that the reader itself, including a charming picture of the three owners, is in the paper.
We don't have any pictures of ourselves together very often, and mm-hmm. that was taken by the great Woods Wheatcroft after our Sandpoint Regatta mm-hmm. race, and I believe Sansere is stabbing me with a handful of carrots, and
yep.
Zach is screaming in agony in the background, and
yeah.
So, you know, this kind of fits.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just I just wanted to, you know, announce that that we've had a little bit of a reorganization here, and Mr. Bessler here is angling toward retirement, and so I just decided that I think Zach and Sansere should be part owners of the reader, and so we gave them the opportunity to buy in, and they accepted, and so now it's the paper's owned by the three of us, and Chris is making his general backward exit to skiing and sailing and having fun and not worrying about the
got a ways to get there yet. So I really wanted to get up on the mountain this morning, as a matter of fact, but mm-hmm. I had some stuff to do in the office.
I heard that there was that there was snow yesterday.
It was pretty fun yesterday.
Were you up
yeah.
there?
I was. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was, you had to work for it. You had to, mm-hmm. I mean, down low, it was kind of like the old premix routine, but up high, I mean, I was finding 5-6 inch pockets of powder, and
mm-hmm. but sticking to the groomers.
No. I was going.
You were
getting
able to get off.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah. I had to stop finally and go have a beer with a couple of friends because I was getting myself in trouble. I was getting a little too aggressive, and so that one beer saved me. And afterward, I said, "Nope, that's it. I'm going home. I got mm-hmm. all my good stuff."
Mm-hmm. Well, good.
Yeah.
Challenging year up there, but, yeah. you know, people are still having mm-hmm. fun, and it's closing mm-hmm. weekend. So the backside's not open, which is always a shame because the mm-hmm. Outback always throws a big party with Maya Kohal on the closing day. And, mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, if I know anything about the mountain culture up there, it's going to be a fun and festive day. It's supposed to be sunny also.
Yeah. The weather's supposed to be very nice. I mean, warm for skiing, but yeah. yeah
so tomorrow very and Saturday, nice. And yeah. what, I mean, Saturday and Sunday. And we'll throw out for us who hold midweek passes that they're honoring those on Saturday. So if you're a midweek pass holder, you can go Saturday.
Okay.
Shouldn't probably say that. Just adds to the crowd.
Yeah, we are broadcasting here. Well, that's our time. We've come to the end of North Idaho News of the Week. I mean, a packed news week on the on the state level that took up most of our time. Ben, we get you in here so rarely. Anything that I forgot to ask you about? Anything you wanted to say before you go?
No.
Preview of what's coming up next in the news?
I think we should keep an eye on the lake level. I think there's an mm-hmm. interesting early rise going on. I know Lakes Commission's really pushing hard to convince the Army Corps to start getting the lake up earlier. There's a yeah. big push there. And so I think this year is an interesting year because of the low snowpack, but we might actually see the lake rise earlier.
Yeah.
I've heard estimates that it's going to be, you know, 2055 or 2056 by like mid-April or in a week from now, maybe. And that just seems a little ahead.
Yeah, well, it's mm-hmm. advancing the warmer temperatures are advancing everything. So there's going to be less coming down overall
mm-hmm. right
through the whole season, but it's coming earlier.
Yeah.
I will say the ospreys are back, The male osprey at the Memorial Field nest has returned. They have high nest fidelity. They come back to their nest each year. And you always wonder if they're going to make it because they fly thousands of miles with all kinds of hazards. But the male's back, and we're hoping that the female gets back and that they have a successful year there at that particular nest. There are ospreys all around, of course.
Is it actually there right now? Are you watching on?
Oh, no, not right now. It might be there right now, but yeah. I'm looking. Actually, we grabbed a little clip. Geese have been getting up there trying to lay eggs, and they've been laying eggs, but they can't actually incubate them because of the structure of we removed the nest materials just to foil the geese. But anyway, so goose has been going up there laying eggs, and we have a little clip of a raven coming by and grabbing that egg and flying off with it. Jeez. It's a rough world out there.
Mm-hmm.
Tough to be a goose in Sandpoint.
Yes, certainly true. Well said, Ben. I guess with that, we'll sign off, and it'll be another week before we're back with more North Idaho News of the Week on next Friday. Stay tuned for Otto's Eclectic Mix and Bird Note coming up at 9 o'clock. And thanks for listening once again to North Idaho News of the Week. And Ben, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.